Hey, hey guys! Welcome back to Mixed Babble after being gone for over a year. I left you in 2020 and now it's 2022. Like, ain't shit changed. Here I am. Here we are.
Yes.
Double mixed twins. No relation. Brittany Brown, Joni Brown.
Right. So, for people that also like true crime, then every other episode is going to be a true crime episode.
And disclaimer, this will not be like anything unicorn and sunshine. This is some dark shit.
Hey guys, welcome to our first episode of the true crime.
We do.
I was just thinking that to be determined.
we figure this out as we go, so we'll get back to
you. You're not here for the name, you're here for the stories.
Yes, and we have some good ones.
We do have some good ones. So let's jump right into stuff. The way these are going to be set up, we're going to be telling you just kind of like how we do the current events in the regular episodes, except everything that we're going to talk about here is going to be true crime related. So we're going to give you some current events that are going on relating to true crime. So a lot of that is going to be in progress, as far as some of them might not be solved. Some of them are in, you know, the person has been apprehended and they're going through the court process. So just depends on what story we're telling. But that's just going to be the current event portion. And then we'll have our main, each have our main story.
Yes. And disclaimer, this will not be like anything unicorn and sunshine. This is some dark shit.
This is some very dark shit, as she giggles. okay. Yeah. So first up, the first story I came across from a couple days ago. Did you hear about Gabby Petito's parents filing a lawsuit against Brian Laundrie's parents?
I did not.
So allegedly, it's believed that Brian Laundrie's parents helped assist him in getting away.
Oh.
And so I'm sure if you're listening to this, you may or may not remember the case that recently happened just a few months ago.
And they discovered like 10 bodies or 11 bodies while looking for her?
Something like that. I don't know if it was that high, but there were some bodies found while they were looking for her. And this took place in Northport, Florida, is where they're from, I believe. And they went on a vacation together or something like that. Here I am.
Like a road trip.
Yeah, a road trip of something. He came back without her. But yeah, so according to Hollywood Unlocked, Gabby Petito's parents filed a lawsuit against Brian Laundrie's parents for allegedly helping him get away with the crime before his death. The lawsuit claims that Chris and Roberta Laundrie knew that their son Brian killed Gabby and helped him with the process of fleeing the country. Joseph Petito and Nicole Schmidt added that Brian pretended to be Gabby after her death by using her cell phone to answer text messages so people would think that she was still alive. I didn't know that.
I did not either.
In one example, Brian responded to a text message from Gabby's grandfather and referred to him as Stan. Gabby's parents said that is something she would have never do if she were still alive. He reportedly used the phone until August 30th and claimed there was no cell phone service in Yosemite, as reported by TMZ. The family also believes that Brian allegedly told his parents what happened a day after Gabby was killed, and they immediately hired an attorney to help with the case.
Dang.
Yeah, so that story is unfolding in reference to that lawsuit.
Wow.
So
that would definitely never happen in my situation with my parents.
Yeah, so that's okay. If my family member, child, whatever, I think I've said this before, I'm turning your ass in. I'd be damned if I'm an accessory to a fucking murder.
Oh, I wasn't meaning it in that way.
Oh, what do you mean?
My family would probably help me out that way.
Oh, no. I ain't doing none of that shit. I'm too cute for prison.
The texting part, like, I know that my parents would be like, this isn't how she speaks. Yeah. Something's off. Yeah. It's happened before where I've had been, like, too drunk and a friend texts my parents back. And they call and they're like, well, we're just making sure it's you.
Oh, okay. At least your parents know you.
Yes. Too but, well.
Yeah, so that's really sad, man.
That's terrible.
Yeah, so as you know, he killed himself last fall after he had claimed responsibility for Petito's death. Allegedly, he had told his parents what he had done the day after she had died on August 27th. And then, I don't think my parents would do that for me. It says that the Petito family was desperately searching for information concerning their daughter. The complaint states, and Petito's parents are seeking unspecified damages that exceed $30,000.
Dang.
Yeah.
I think it'd be circumstantial if my parents would help. You know, like if I were in a domestic violence situation.
Yeah, I'm just talking about, like, you just out of nowhere.
Just randomly killing someone.
Yeah.
Yeah, that. They'd probably be like, nah, Britt, you need to chill. We'll come visit you.
Like, we'll put some money in your commissary.
Yeah, we'll get you some good snacks.
If you don't have anything, I have another story.
Girl, you know I don't have anything because I'm terrible. Guys, I will eventually have something. I do have stories, just, you know, not current.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Which I think I actually mentioned it to you, like, hours ago, that's the format that I was thinking, and you were, like, all for it. And I know you like, you know, me to talk or whatever. It's okay.
Yeah, I like your voice, Joni.
Thank you. All right, so next story. So there's a video that captures a real estate agent turned serial killer in Miami. So this guy, this is a very, very recent story as of like a month ago.
Oh, wow.
And Miami-Dade County, Florida. So the Miami-Dade State Attorney's Office officially charged a real estate agent named Willie Suarez Maceo with two first-degree murders, one attempted murder and one attempted premeditated murder, labeling him a serial killer. Miami-Dade State Attorney Catherine Fernandez Rundle spoke at a news conference to discuss the case where numerous surveillance videos were shown. So he was actually caught on video for some, if not all of them. Yeah. It's a chilling video showing a serial killer in action, according to the prosecutors. And this is a quote, "Having an unknown killer striking out at random victims is like no other crime to solve." I think I was supposed to emphasize that. It's like no other crime to solve. Miami-Dade State Attorney Catherine Fernandez Rundle said during a press conference announcing charges against a 25-year-old Suarez Maceo, and showing video of how he was caught. So he was, Suarez Maceo's online profile showed a smiling and well-dressed professional real estate agent, and records reveal that he had no criminal history in Florida.
Most don't.
On October 16th, 2021 at 9 p.m. in downtown Miami, a homeless man identified as Manuel Perez was stabbed to death. Fernandez Rundle, which is the state attorney, I believe I said, described what she said was Suarez Maceo's first homicide. I didn't know he stabbed anyone. I thought he shot them all. So that's... Dang. I feel like stabbings are so personal.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, you're a different level of killer if you can, like... Because you're right there.
Yeah, it's very personal. Manuel Perez was homeless, and he had been sleeping outside on the sidewalk at the time of the stabbing. Two witnesses heard Mr. Perez yelling, "Help, help." One witness saw a man making an upward and downward movement as if striking the victim. The man was described as a thin-built black male, 26 to 27 years of age, short hair, clean-shaven, and wearing a black T-shirt. Surveillance video from a nearby business captured a clear picture of an individual matching the description. Another surveillance camera from a local business shows the man walking toward the area where the scene of the crime took place. Fernandez Rundle pointed out that there was a very clear picture of the suspect later identified as Suarez Macio.
Oh my.
Despite the video, detectives couldn't identify the man. The homicide investigation went cold, but the suspect struck again on December 21st, 2020. A homeless man was shot and bleeding from the head. He survived.
Oh shit. So wait, to recap. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like he's just going after
random homeless people.
Okay.
Yep. Yep. A bullet casing was found and also a set of footprints. Fernandez Rundle said it was the third incident that broke the case. 2 hours later, Jerome Price, who was identified as homeless and sleeping on the ground, was shot 5 times and 5 9-millimeter bullet casings were found. On surveillance video, a black Dodge Charger drove by and then the video captures flashes from a gun.
Dang.
So he was shooting from a car.
And he did that 2 hours after shooting someone else?
Yeah.
That's some Ted Bundy shit.
Yep. So when the police get that video, they are then able to catch the last 3 digits of the license tag. Detectives were able to piece together the full license plate from closed circuit television cameras in the area. You know what I just realized and learned? What? That's what CTV stands for. I didn't know that.
What?
CTV. They always say, oh, they caught him on CTV. It's circuit television.
Oh.
I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
Oh, there you go.
Huh. Fun fact.
Fun fact. I'm literally like, circuit television.
Wow.
I've always heard CTV. And I'm like, what does that even mean exactly? This was a key break to start stripping away at the anonymity of this alleged mystery killer. The tag number came back to a 2015 black Dodge Charger. She said a connection with the car was also noted in the unsolved October killing of Manuel Perez. The Charger was also seen circling the area before Price's shooting. The car was registered to Suarez Macio. Detectives showed up at the real estate agent's work where they saw him sitting in the car outside of his place of business. Police stopped him as he exited the vehicle. In the midst of a pat-down, a loaded black Glock 19 9mm handgun was found in the right front waistband of his pants. The firearm was connected to the spent 9mm casings that were recovered next to Price's body and another victim, according to Fernandez Rundle. And that information is obtained from local10.com.
Oh my. That sounds like, I feel like the killers that target people who they think no one's going to look for, yep, those are the ones that scare me the most. Mm-hmm. Because they legitimately are, they just want to kill.
Mm-hmm.
Like, mm-hmm, they just need their fix.
Yep. Ironically enough, the story that I am covering today is along those lines,
mm-hmm,
of that.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing about it.
Yep. So, in other news, because you know I'm just bringing you the shit left and right.
Yeah, I'm getting updates.
I know your face as I'm reading to you is like on the edge of your seat. So this one I thought was very interesting. This is from the New York Times.com. So Harvey Marcelin was charged with murder after a head was found in her Brooklyn apartment. Officials said it belonged to a dismembered body discovered in a shopping cart.
Okay.
This just...
You said she?
See, that's where I was a little bit confused, and which is why I didn't read the headline, because it says Harvey Marcelin, but it, mm-hmm, said she. So, I'm not 100% sure. Because it said that the title of the article actually says, she killed two women. At 83, she is charged with dismembering a third.
Oh, so it is a she?
Yeah.
Wow.
So it says, and you want to know how recent this is?
Well, if she's 83, I'm guessing she wasn't killing.
I don't know. You don't know.
I mean, an 83-year-old?
You want to know how recent this article is?
Yes.
3 days old.
Wait, okay, and when did these killings happen? So she just now got caught. When did they happen?
I will get to that.
Okay.
So this article was actually posted on March 10th, 2022.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's some real current news for you.
Yeah. An 83-year-old Brooklyn woman convicted twice of killing women she lived with was charged with murder on Thursday after investigators found a head in her apartment that officials said belonged to a body discovered in a shopping cart last week.
So she was killing people at 83.
Harvey Marcelin, who had served decades in prison for murder.
Oh my God.
And manslaughter before her release in 2019, was arrested on March 4th. And was initially charged with concealment of human remains.
Jesus Christ. Our judicial system.
Okay, so, or our rehabilitation system.
Yeah, all of it. Wow.
And I don't even know if that sentence even made sense with my speech impediment, but I will.
No,
Yeah. So she's been charged with the concealment of human remains. Miss Marcelin, who was listed as a male in earlier court records, but now identifies as a woman, according to law enforcement officials, was indicted on second-degree murder charges on Thursday in the death of Susan Layden, who was 68. She is accused of dismembering her and hiding her body parts. The official said it was not clear how Miss Marcelin and Miss Layden knew each other. Oh, so they weren't roommates. I was under the impression that they lived together or something along those lines.
Yeah, because they said something about killing her roommates.
Yeah. Two of them? Yeah. Remember, there's now three people, according to the headline, so we'll see, okay. A lawyer listed as Ms. Marcelin's attorney could not be immediately reached for comment. The police first discovered pieces of Ms. Layden's remains in the early hours of March 3rd, 2022, when a 911 caller reported that they had found body parts in a shopping cart outside of a pawn shop at the corner of Atlantic and Pennsylvania Avenue in Brooklyn. Police officers arrived to find a woman's torso inside a multicolored bag with a flower decal.
I'm done. I quit. Because now we got 80-something-year-old serial killers dismembering bodies and putting them in shopping carts. Yep.
You can't just assume like, oh, you know, they're old, they're frail, they're this, they're that, they're they are not.
Now I'm going to be side-eyeing everybody.
I do that anyway.
I mean, I at least all like, you know, the fragile-looking old people, I was like, surely, but shit, now everybody's evil.
Days later, the police searched Ms. Marcelin's building nearby after surveillance footage showed Ms. Layden entering the building with the same multicolored bag on February 27th, but not leaving. They discovered Ms. Layden's head inside Ms. Marcelin's home.
Wow.
Since Ms. Marcelin's arrest, can you imagine the cops coming in? And they're probably just like, oh, we're going to just check, you know, da-da-da-da. Because I think they were saying they were checking everybody. And then to find a head, those cops are going to need therapy for the rest of their lives.
They probably went in there and were thinking, oh, this one's going to be fine. Yeah. Like, this will be quick.
Yeah. And oh, they're old. They're this, you know, they're frail.
Holy crap.
Yep. And there is a human head. And what? Why are you keeping it?
And what's up with the shopping carts?
That's where she dumped the torso.
And the head.
She had the head in her apartment.
Oh, the torso in the shopping cart was this of the head. Oh, I thought she put
yes.
Like,
so typically, okay, there's a body
shopping carts.
Typically, there's a body and an associated head.
Okay. Sorry, that's again.
We're not laughing at the situation. We are laughing at Brittany.
We're laughing at my lack of ability to comprehend things appropriately. No. Okay, I'm following now.
Usually it's a twofer one. It's a twofer.
I was going to say, like, that's a really weird MO, like putting body parts in shopping carts.
No, I don't know why they did that. I don't know why they did that. Because then my thing is, were you not trying to hide it because you'd had it in front of a pawn shop in the open in a cart?
That's so strange.
But then you kept the evidence in your apartment. You kept the head.
What was she going to do?
That's the question.
Oh my God.
Yeah, who knows? I guess I'm sure the story will reveal as they go through the court system.
We're going to have to keep like updating everyone.
Yep. So, they discovered the head inside of Miss Marceline's home. Since Miss Marceline's arrest, authorities have also reviewed surveillance footage showing her leaving the apartment with what investigators believe was the torso. Prosecutors said during a court hearing on Thursday. It's just so weird because it's Sunday and that was just a few days ago.
Yeah.
Miss Marceline has served decades in state prison in connection with two Manhattan homicides in 1963 and 1984.
Why'd she get out?
That you did your time.
Wait, 1963 and 1980. Did she do time for the 63 before the 84 happened? Or was...
I mean, it's...
Did she get caught after 84?
It's 21 years difference. So maybe they did their time, got out, did it again, got out
and did it again.
Because they said they just got out in 2019.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, did they really let her out twice?
Yep. In October... Here, I'll tell you the story. In October of 1963, she was convicted of first-degree murder for fatally shooting her then-girlfriend in Harlem in a Harlem apartment building. The state court judge overseeing the case imposed a life sentence after the jury was unable to decide whether to impose a death penalty. In May of 1984, Miss Marceline was released from prison. So they got out in 1984.
And she killed someone the same year.
On lifetime parole. I didn't know that was a thing. Lifetime parole, according to the state records, less than a year later, after a body was found in a bag near Central Park, Manhattan, prosecutors said Miss Marceline had stabbed to death another woman she had been living with. In 1986, she pled guilty to first-degree manslaughter and was sentenced to 6 to 12 years in prison. Because of her parole status, that sentence was added to the original life term. Over the next 3 decades, she repeatedly sought release on parole and was denied. In a 1997 appearance before the state parole board, Miss Marceline described the 1984 crime and said she had quote-unquote problems with women.
Clearly.
I find that very interesting. You have problems with women, but you wanted to be one.
It sounds like, from a psychological standpoint, I'm going to guess there's some mommy issues there.
Yeah. I find that very interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. And then, my brain, the way my brain works... I'm thinking, now that they identify as a woman, what prison do they go to?
Well, actually, I can answer that.
Okay.
It depends on what she's got going on downstairs.
So if she still has a penis...
She's going with the men.
Okay.
So that was the first thought in my head was, well, is she saying she's a woman now hoping to get put with female inmates instead of male?
But then you're telling them that you have an issue with women, so now you need to be in solitary confinement.
Yeah.
Because you can't be in general pop.
Yeah, they just need to send her to a hospital or like a psychiatric prison.
Yeah, there's definitely some deep-rooted things going on there.
Wow.
In 2010, the state denied another bid for parole saying, quote, your release at this time is incompatible with the welfare and safety of the community. Truer words have never been spoken. That was in 2010, but y'all motherfuckers let her out.
Again.
She was released on parole in 2019. And here we are today.
See, this, I 100% put the blame on, I don't know if I should say the judicial system or who, but the system.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how are you going to, this, murdered twice. Mm-hmm. One, the same year she got out of prison. Mm-hmm. She goes back. And then does it again.
Mm-hmm. I find it interesting, though, because, like, none of the crimes that, at least not from the article, talks about, like, any sexual violence at all.
Yeah, it's just, like, anger.
Just, yeah, like, true anger. It takes a special fucking kind of person to dismember somebody.
Yeah, and a special level of, like, hatred or just illness in general.
Yeah.
Like, I'm assuming maybe something messed up happened with this person's mom as a kid or a female caregiver. But that takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
And still doing it at 83?
Yeah. Like, go relax somewhere.
How you kill someone at 83? How old was the person they killed? Did you say?
Which one?
the one that happened at 83.
I think they were 60-something years old. Wow. That was the one that they found her head. She was 68. Susan Layden.
Oh, I want to know more. Like,
yeah, that's the one she dismembered.
Like, how did she get these people to... How did she overpower these people?
I mean, at the end of the day, I think we can agree that an average male is going to be stronger than your average female.
That's just... But 83?
I know.
I can't get over it. I know. Is this the oldest serial killer in history? Like, are we breaking some records?
I don't know.
I don't think I've heard of anyone killing this at this age.
Yeah, you hear a lot in their 60s, though.
Yeah.
50s and 60s.
But 80s?
Yeah. Dang. Yeah. Like, you did your time. Go relax.
Chill. Retire. Like,
read a book.
Normal. Be
Listen grandma. To a podcast.
Bake some cookies. Maybe that's how she got people. Like, was like,
I've had some cookies. Yeah. Not that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so that's what I got for you guys for current events.
That's a doozy.
Yeah, dismemberment always kind of is a tough one.
Yeah. I'm going to have to do my own, like, side research on that. I have questions. Mm-hmm. I want to see this person. Did mm-hmm. you see pictures?
No, they didn't show any pictures of them.
I want to see what they look like.
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't show any pictures. They also didn't, you know, state if they're fully transitioned. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know any other details other than what I've told you all. Again, this was on the NewYorkTimes.com, written by Rebecca Davis O'Brien and Allie Watkins. So you can check it out, or, you know, just listen to what I just said, because I literally read you the entire article.
I am interested to hear more about that for sure. That's so many questions. Like, what did she identify as when each murder happened?
Right.
Right. Oh, I want to know about childhood.
I was about to say about the childhood. That's what I'm always like, what made you this way?
Yes.
Who hurt you?
But I went to grad school initially for forensic psychology. I wanted to be a forensic psychiatrist and work, like, in my head, I'm thinking, like, either with the FBI or within the prison system, you know, profiling, working with serial killers, all of that, mm-hmm. mass murders, like the heavy stuff. So, something that I don't remember, because, you know, I'm getting a little up there in my age.
Stop.
I don't remember if this is, like, what actually sparked my interest, but I remember in high school, we were supposed to write a paper, and I chose to do mine over this serial killer. And it was hands down, still to this day, one of the craziest stories I've ever heard. And I had never heard of this man, but I remember it really freaked out my teacher at the time. And I can only imagine what was going through his head. But so the person's name is Peter Curtin. Have you heard of him?
I have.
So you probably know him by his serial killer name, which was the, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this correctly, the Dusseldorf vampire.
Yes. Somebody that does true crime covered this. Might have been Bailey Sarian. It was somebody that covered it.
Did she? If she's covered it, I haven't seen it.
I don't know. But I've heard of it before, I think.
Well, he's one that, like, I'm surprised more people don't know about.
Yeah, talk to me like I don't know it, because my memories.
And mine is too. So this is like, I'm going to give you guys some facts here from biography.com and my little serial killer encyclopedia. And also just, you know, from doing research in the past. But like I said, this was a while ago. So Peter Curtin, this was an older serial killer. He was born in 1883.
Oh, the other day.
Yeah. Yeah. So
my parents say that, Jamaicans. I don't know. Sorry. I'm sorry for cutting you off. They say the other day. It could mean yesterday. It could mean 55 years ago. But it was the other day.
So he was born the other day. And to get back to the childhood thing, he was born into a very abusive, impoverished family environment. I guess his father was very abusive. Like I said, extreme poverty. This was in, I don't know if it's pronounced Cologne. It's spelled like Cologne, Germany. And he was the eldest of 13 children.
Okay.
So, full house. And his father, they said that he was an alcoholic with sadistic tendencies. Mm. Who brutalized both his wife and the children in their one-room apartment.
Okay. So that's already the makings of a psychopath.
Yeah, that explains a lot already. But so he was, it says that there was daily subjection to sexual violence as well.
From the father?
It doesn't specify, but I'm assuming.
Okay.
So obviously that had an impact on him. And then at the age of 9, he developed this weird friendship with like a dog catcher or something that lived in the same area, mm-hmm. who introduced him, again, at 9 years old, to bestiality.
I know this story.
It's so messed
up. I know this story. I don't know who covered it, but I do remember it.
So we've got all of this. We're only at age 9 right now. So fun fact is, you like to say.
Yes, I do.
So only 1% of serial killers of known serial killers, mm-hmm. have killed like in pre-adolescent years, like under the age of 10. Mm. And Mr. Curtin here is one of them. He claims his first victim, I'm sorry, 2 victims at the age of 9.
Wow.
He drowned, he pushed one overboard, and they were out on a boat, and I guess the second one jumped in after him to try to rescue him, and then old Peter held them both underwater, and they died. I don't know how old those children were.
That is fucking crazy.
Yeah. So as he matured, he started, I guess, advancing to larger animals. I'm sorry, I'm not meaning to laugh, but larger animals, and extended his bestiality to sheep, goats, and other farmyard animals. So I guess he was first just messing with like cats and dogs, and now he's
graduated.
Got a little bigger. So he
those found poor animals
in particular pleasure whilst killing the animals while having intercourse with them.
Okay.
That was his kink. Okay. So, moving forward.
Yeah.
To 1899, so he's 16 now. I like how this particular article says he progressed to petty crime. Like, we're just going to dismiss the murders.
I'm mad that it that's the progression. It's murder and then petty crime.
Yeah, like, it starts over when it's more like adolescent.
It's more like he declined to petty crime.
And that's what's so fascinating, because usually they start, like, hurting animals and work their way up to humans. But
can we talk about the fact that someone, like, the dog walker introduced him to bestiality?
I know.
But y'all need to know who your kids are playing with and talking to.
Mm-mm.
Like, what the fuck?
Yeah. There's so many things about this story that are going to make you say, what the fuck? So, at the age of 16, petty crimes now. He left his home at age 16 to escape his dad and all that violence. And shortly after he left, the father was arrested for incestuous acts against his 13-year-old daughter, Peter's sister.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's see here. Sorry, I just lost my place. Curtin's petty crime soon led to the first of many short prison sentences, which sounds kind of similar to Homegirl we talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
They mentioned how his crimes start getting a little more sadistic with the animals, so I'm guessing he starts doing a little more torturous things.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So here's where it gets really good.
Really good. You take that with a grain of salt.
He discovered a fascination for brutal sexual acts while in solitary confinement, which enhanced his fantasies so much that he began to break prison rules to ensure maximum time in solitary confinement. So he wanted to be alone.
Right.
And they knew he wanted to be alone, and they still let him out. Yeah, the system again. So between these spells, prison spells, sorry, he killed a couple more people. There were some sexual assaults. One of them was a victim of a 10-year-old girl named Christina Klein. She was sexually assaulted and stabbed in 1913 on May 25th. While her parents were at work in the pub below her bedroom.
Wow.
And
he's a full blown adult at this time.
He's grown or close to grown at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward, he tries to go to the military. I don't know if he's trying to turn his life around or.
Does the military take people that have a record?
I guess they did during World War I.
Yeah, they just took
anybody. They were like, just anybody.
Right.
Anybody. Military discipline didn't suit him, so he quit. That was short-lived.
Okay.
So, let's see. He deserted the barracks. He was jailed again and remained in prison. It doesn't say, I'm sure it says somewhere else, but not in this article, and I cannot recall from my previous research what for, but until 1921.
Mm-hmm.
So he was in prison from 1913 to 1921. Again, he was released. He moved, met and married a former prostitute.
Okay. Pause. So, I don't know if you are aware of this, but the terminology has been changed. And so, with my article, I had to change a lot of the wording on how they were referenced previously, but it is sex worker.
Yes. And I want to point out, I only said prostitute because that's what the specific article on biography.com says.
Mm-hmm.
But yes. Normally sex worker, and she had been to jail for murdering her fiance.
Okay. So
a match made in heaven. Hell.
How do you go? Where do you, like, what? I can't even, words. Like, what? Like, imagine being with somebody that you knew that killed somebody, and then even if you killed somebody, maybe under different circumstances, you were protecting yourself, who knows? how do you trust the other person?
Right.
Like, I'd be sleeping with, like, both eyes open.
Exactly. Like, I don't know. Evil attracts evil, apparently. But, the funny thing is, after he married her, he kind of settled down for a few years and, like, got a real job. It said he worked in the trade union for about 4 years. And then his tendencies came back. So he started catching things on fire.
Was he a pyromaniac?
They just say arsonist? Arson attacks.
Okay.
Arson attacks. Started doing more sexual attacks. And then he stabbed a woman named Maria Kuhn, K-U-H-N, who survived. She was stabbed 24 times.
Oh, my God. And she survived.
So, apparently in 1929...
why is he still, like...
I know.
This is crazy.
He's just running around doing whatever he wants. So, it says the crime escalation reached its peak in 1929 when he killed a 9-year-old girl named Rosa. He stabbed her 13 times, and I'm assuming sexually assaulted her because they mentioned that he climaxed during the stabbings.
What the fuck?
Oddly worded, if I do say so myself, but anyway, so that's when she was the first of a number of, like, she's who set off, like, his real serial killer crew. So, like, it's like they just dismiss all of this other shit.
All those other murders just were like, oh, you know, what about this made it, like, the catalyst?
Yeah, I don't know if he, like, went on a rampage.
Was it the first time he climaxed?
Maybe with a human.
Because then maybe he's like, oh, I could do this and this at the same time.
Yeah, maybe it was his first time doing it because he had done it with the animals,
right,
but not humans yet. So we'll say that. So he killed, she was the first of a number of victims, including young girls, women, and even men over the next 15 months. He killed a 45-year-old mechanic five days after he had killed or stabbed the woman however many times.
I think he said like 20...
24 30, times.
20, yeah.
So he was killing pretty, like, he wasn't having a down period.
So they were all at random, I'm assuming.
It appears so.
And he was it men and women? Or
men and women.
Okay.
And young
and,
girls.
And animals.
And animals.
And everybody. Everybody can get it.
It doesn't mention young boys, though.
No, it killed the two boys on the boat.
Oh, yeah. His first victims.
Yeah.
Okay, so he killed a little bit of everybody.
But it's funny because all of this has probably stemmed from his issue with his father.
Yeah, and they never specify what sadistic tendencies.
Well, there's obviously incestual things happening.
Yes.
But.
And has to be some torture of some kind.
Yeah.
Because, wow. Okay, so the vampire part, where does that come into play?
I didn't even remember about that. I thought it was the blood of, like, stabbing people.
So it says that sensationalist German press covered the attacks extensively, and when they discovered that investigators believed the attacker might be drinking the blood of his victims, that's when the name Vampire of Dusseldorf... I hope I'm saying that right, came into play. And
I love how when you're like, could it get any worse?
Yeah, yeah. This one, it just keeps going and going and going.
Then you throw blood drinking into it.
So now we're in 1929. It says it became their conviction was premature.
You don't say. What gave you that idea?
A series of strangulations and stabbings occurred. Let's see. And he put all the bodies, I guess, in a fairground.
That's creepy as fuck.
He murdered a bunch of foster sisters that were 5, ranged from 5 to 14 years old. He assaulted another woman. I'm just trying to give you guys like a skim because I mean, there's more. So if you really want to know, do your own research on this one. But he just kept killing. Let's see. He killed another woman later in 1929, two other victims. I don't even know what count we're on at this point. And it seems like he bounces back and forth between adults and kids. Cause he kills an adult and then he'll like go kill a 5-year-old and then he'll kill an adult and then go kill like a 9-year-old. I don't know what's going on with that. So the attacks continued into the winter and the spring of 1930, but none were fatal. So he just started like raping, beating up people.
Oh, you know, just a little rapey rape.
He needed a little break.
That's just a little. What a fucked up story.
Right, I know. And I know it sounds all over the place, but like there's just so much. So obviously there were survivors that reported him and kind of led to him getting caught. But it says that on May 14th, 1930, that was the start of the chain of events that resulted in his eventual capture. He offered a young unemployed woman named Maria somewhere to stay. He took her to his apartment, hoping to have sex with her. And when she refused, he agreed to find her somewhere else to stay. But when he returned her to the train station, he took her in the nearby forest and raped her real quick and let her go.
Oh.
Yeah. So.
What?
Yeah. But let her go.
He didn't seem very intelligent.
He seems a very scattered, erratic serial killer. Yeah. Like, he doesn't get better with time. He just is very.
Maybe he was. But the thing is, you did say that he enjoyed being in solitary confinement. And so he's probably like, at this point, I'm just waiting for them to catch me. Yeah, and like, they suck at this.
I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So we're going to, again, bouncing all over the place. During all of this time, it says he maintained a fond attachment to his wife.
Bitch, I forgot he was married.
Yeah.
Where was she at during all of this?
I have no idea. Under a rock?
And a fond attachment to your wife. I would hope so.
Well, he, I guess, eventually confessed to her that he was the Dusseldorf vampire.
Oh.
And detailed the killings and attacks to her as if, you know, she wanted to hear that.
You know, for coffee.
So, on May 24th, 1930, I don't know who this... They're adding an extra person here. The wife's name. This is the first time they're putting it. Frau.
Frau. No idea.
Well, she apparently took the police to a designated rendezvous site that her and Peter had talked about at a local church where he surrendered silently.
That was very...
All of that for...
Anticlimactic.
Right.
But I'm glad that it ended that way.
Peacefully.
Oh my gosh. After the rampage, if you want to call it peacefully.
So, once under arrest, he provided an astonishing, as we know, detailed account of his string of crimes to the psychologist there at the jail, who ended up writing and publishing a book called The Sadist. I'll have to read that. I didn't know that until just now.
Kudos to the wife for turning him in.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it looks like his trial was in 1931. Obviously, he was charged. But he was only charged for 9 murders and 7 attempted murders. I feel like, based on just what I said, there were... who knows how many we didn't even know
about. What about the rapes, the assaults?
Exactly.
You know, the petty theft, the most important one, apparently.
Yeah, yeah. So, but I wanted to point out a couple of things in particular. It only took 90 minutes which I don't know why it took that long, for the jury to come to a verdict of guilty on all counts.
Actually, 90 minutes isn't that long. Sometimes it's days.
But with it, I would have been like, I don't even need to hear the rest.
I know.
Just kill him.
anything that's less than like 5 hours or whatever is like fast.
Oh my God. I feel like this should have been like a...
Yeah.
Like, we're all on the same page? Yeah. All right, let's go back.
Yeah.
So they did obviously charge him with that. All counts. He received 9 death sentences. And he was executed by guillotine on July...
Guillotine. Guillotine is the when they behead you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On July...
But you could tell that shit's old school.
In Germany. And this is the part I wanted to point out. His last words.
Let them eat cake? No.
Tell me after my head is chopped off, will I still be able to hear, at least for a moment, the sound of my own blood gushing from the stump of my neck? That would be the pleasure to end all pleasures.
What a fucking maniac.
The end.
Oh. I don't know if I should clap or...
cry or get therapy,
that was
maybe?
That was a lot.
And apparently his head was like mummified or something, but I didn't really get too much into this because I was like, I've had enough. I've had enough.
Thank you for that.
In a nutshell, that's one of the most messed up ones I've heard about to date.
All right. Well, thank you for your contribution today.
Yeah. I think we talked about the oldest and youngest, maybe, serial killers.
Yeah. So,
So what you got?
My story, before I get into it, my source for this portion, before I get into my story, is the FernandinaObserver.com. And so... This part has nothing to do with my person. However, the U.S. murder rate is currently, and this article is in reference to 2020. Mm-hmm. So I guess you couldn't really say currently. But as of December 2021, the U.S. murder rate is at its highest level in nearly 2.5 decades.
I believe it.
A total of 21,570 murders were committed nationwide in 2020.
COVID.
Up nearly 30% from the previous year. 30%.
Lockdown had people literally losing their minds.
Yeah, this is the largest annual increase on record. Now, there's a ranking of where a few states that we wanted to... you didn't know anything about who I've chosen. You didn't know anything as to why I was telling you what states you would be interested in hearing.
Yeah, but now I'm knowing where Missouri comes into play.
So I found this very interesting. New Hampshire ranks number 50 for the number of murders per 100 people. I'm sorry, 100,000 people.
Wow.
Yeah, number 50 out of the 50 states.
New Hampshire.
So now it says per 100,000 people. So if there was only 100,000 people, then of course they're going to rank better.
Right.
But I don't know how many people are in New Hampshire.
That's
They only had...
I don't know anything about New Hampshire.
They had 12 total murders in 2020.
Maybe we should move there.
12. Like, the number one and the number two next to each other.
Wow.
Yeah.
I feel like our area has that in, like, two nights.
Yeah. So, you said you wanted to... You didn't know why I asked you, but you mentioned California.
Mm-hmm.
I asked her off air. I just said, name a state that you're interested in hearing something about. And so, she said, I don't know, California. So, California is actually ranked number 27.
Okay,
out of 50.
That's surprising.
With 5.6 murders per 100,000 people. In 2020, California had 2,203 total murders.
Okay. That's a lot lower than I would have anticipated.
I would say the same. It's a huge state.
Yeah.
So I'd say the same. Now, Florida ranks number 25.
What?
I was shocked. I was shocked.
All those Florida man stories.
I was shocked. We're right in the middle as an average.
Wow.
So Florida's ranked at number 25 with 5.9 per 100,000 people, with 1,290 total murders in 2020.
Do you think it could be, though, like you said earlier, because there's so many people in Florida that kind
of... It averages out.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
And, like, how do they come up with a consensus, you know, with the...
That's of the found bodies.
Okay.
So you got to think about that, too.
Damn.
So this is where it gets interesting. Can you guess who ranked number two?
St. Louis?
I don't know about St. Louis, but I know it's the entire state. Missouri.
Probably because of St. Louis.
Missouri ranked number two with 11.8 per 100,000 people. But what I found interesting is they only had these are murders we're talking about, but in the grand scheme, 723 total murders. So it must be it's a huge state, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a...
So depending on people, it brings down the average.
It's definitely nothing like Florida,
yeah,
population wise. But I do know that St. Louis has been ranked the most dangerous city in the country a few years.
Yeah, so they're number two. Mm-hmm. Can you guess what number one is?
Shit. After hearing all this, I don't know. Somewhere boring, like freaking Louisiana.
Yep.
What?
Louisiana.
Oh my God.
Louisiana ranked number one with 15.8 murders per 100,000 people.
You know, with all the swamp though.
Yeah.
That kind of makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So they had 734 total murders in 2020.
Wow.
So Louisiana is number one. And that brings me to my story. My story today is on Samuel Little. He's, according to the FBI, America's most prolific serial killer.
And isn't he African-American?
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
Which is also rare for serial killers.
Yep, I'm sorry about that noise. what was the last thing you said?
That he's African-American. That's very rare for serial killer, the profile.
Yep. Yeah. So local10.com is where I obtained half of my information, and the other is from Wikipedia.
Okay.
Which I know you love. Wikipedia actually does list out some, if not all, of the victims, and some have been unidentified and identified, and mm-hmm. it does tell you the manner in which that they were murdered or found. So if you want to find that information in more detailed, that's where you'll probably want to go and research yourself. And the reason why I'm saying that is because I'm going to end up saying it in the article or story that I've mashed together, but he has like 93 murders.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to read them all.
It's a long list.
Yeah.
The longest list that we know of.
Yeah. To put it in perspective, I had written it on here and I removed it, but the Green River Killer
mm-hmm.
was like 80 murders that he committed, allegedly. And he has surpassed him by 13.
Jesus.
So, all right. So, Samuel Little, whose real name is Samuel McDowell, which I don't even know where the little comes from.
Mm-hmm.
His real name is Samuel McDowell. He was born on June 7th, 1940, in Reynolds, Georgia, to a mother he claimed was a sex worker.
Okay.
I found it interesting. I removed it from the article, or from my work, but it stated that his mother allegedly had, like, abandoned him
mm-hmm.
After, like, giving birth to him or whatever. I don't know if it was right after, but allegedly she had like discarded him somewhere.
Okay.
So I didn't know if that was accurate or in what context, because he later looks for her to live with her, I believe. So that's why I was like, I don't know. That's just me inserting the information that I read that didn't like, really did make sense.
Did she meet him like at the fire station, or did she have him a couple months and then
leave? Yeah, because it said this part here from a different source says soon after his birth, Little's family moved to Lorain, Ohio, where he was brought up mainly by his grandmother.
Okay.
He attended Hawthorne Junior High School, where he had problems with discipline and achievement. In an interview, Little recalls that at only 4 or 5 years old, while attending school in Lorain, Ohio, he became transfixed by how his kindergarten teacher was rubbing her neck and says that that is when he realized it was turning him on.
Interesting.
As a teenager, he collected true crime magazines that depicted women being choked. It wasn't until he was 30 years old when he started acting out on his fantasies. Samuel Little was said to be a charmer back then, and a self-proclaimed former boxer. He had a way with the women. He drove nice cars to impress the women, and in interviews, he talked about the cars he was driving. For years, he repeated the same pattern, picking up women, befriending them, sometimes spending days with them, and then eventually beating and strangling them.
Wow.
In the late 1960s, he moved to Miami because that was where his biological mother was living. He took jobs working as a cemetery worker, and I'm going to assume at a different time, and an ambulance attendant by his own account.
Interesting career choices, considering.
Yeah. He said he then began traveling more widely and had more run-ins with the law, being arrested in 8 states for crimes that included driving under the influence, fraud, shoplifting, solicitation, armed robbery, aggravated assault, and rape. Little claimed that he took up boxing during these stints in prison, during his stints in prison, referring to himself as a former prize fighter. In Miami, he usually picked the women up from the same areas by the Turf Motel. He focused on their necks because he stated that that is how he believed a woman should be killed.
Okay.
Police and the FBI now know that Little's first kill was a woman named Mary Brosley, and it was in 1970 in Miami. In 1982, Little was arrested in Pascagoula, Mississippi, and charged with the murder of a 22-year-old Melinda Rose LaPierre, who had gone missing in September of that year. A grand jury declined to indict him for the murder. However, while under investigation, Little was extradited to Florida and tried for the murder of 26-year-old Patricia Ann Mount, whose body had was found in September of 1982. Prosecution witnesses identified Little in court as a person who spent time with Mount on the night before her disappearance. Due to the mistrust of the witness testimonies, Little was acquitted in January of 1984. You gotta... so many times you hear, they just could have got him if, you know...
Do I need to say it again?
It's so frustrating. It's so frustrating. Little moved to California, where he stayed in the vicinity of San Diego. In October of 1984, he was arrested for kidnapping, beating, and strangling a 22-year-old Lori Barros, who survived.
Oh.
1 month later, he was found by the police in the backseat of his car with an unconscious woman, also beaten and strangled, in the same location as the attempted murder of Barros.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he had a special spot to take these women.
Yep. Little served 2.5 years in prison for both crimes.
I'm done.
He actually murdered one by strangling her, and he was an attempted murderer on the other one, and he only served 2.5 years in prison for both crimes.
All I have is a big sigh for that.
Upon his release in February of 1987, he immediately moved to Los Angeles and committed at least 10 additional murders.
Oh, big surprise there.
Yeah. At least a dozen of his victims were killed across from the East Coast to the West Coast of Florida. Florida and California are where Little admits to killing the most. all women, including two transgender victims, and all of which were strangled except one victim, who he admits to drowning. So out of 93, he only drowned one.
Wow. Go ahead. I have questions when you're done.
He targeted mentally challenged females, sex workers, and females that had both drug and alcohol addiction issues.
So vulnerable populations. Mm-hmm.
The FBI has confirmed Little's involvement in at least 60 of the 93 confessed murders, the largest number of cases for any serial killer in the United States history. His MO, the type of victims he chose, how he disposed of their bodies, what he had done to the victims. He did not stab or shoot his victims and would actually get upset when he would be asked during interviews, as he opted to strangle his victims with the exception of the one. Mm-hmm. Little wasn't a rapist. Little's sexual pleasure came from strangling women. Los Angeles police nicknamed him the choke and stroke killer.
That's the first time I've heard that one, though. I'm sorry.
It's a silly name, but I'm also like, I don't know the name. I don't know. Yeah, they nicknamed him the choke and stroke killer because he often masturbated while strangling his victims.
Oh, a multitasker.
Yeah, it just reminds me of your story.
Yeah,
that's why I was just like, that's weird. Coincidental.
And we didn't know who the other one was talking
about. Yeah, that's very coincidental. So Little was apprehended at a homeless shelter on September 5th, 2012 in Kentucky, and was taken to the Los Angeles, where he would face outstanding drug charges. While in custody for the narcotics charge, the Los Angeles Police Department detectives obtained a match to Little on victims in three unsolved murders that happened between 1987 and 1989.
Dang.
This was 2012 when he's apprehended for drugs.
And that's what he got caught.
Yep. In 2014, he was charged and convicted for three counts of murder for the murders of Carol Eileen Elford, Guadalupe Duarte Apodaca, and Audrey Nelson Everett. For those convictions, he will serve three consecutive life sentences with no possibility of parole. On the day of the verdict, Little continued to insist on his innocence. In 2018, he was also convicted for the murder of Denise Christie Brothers. Little had drawn portraits. Did you know he drew?
I don't think so.
Yeah, there's a lot of artwork that he did where he was able to, from memory, draw portraits of all these women that he had killed.
Okay.
The portraits were released by the FBI in the hopes of someone identifying the women. At least one portrait solved a cold case in Akron, Ohio. In November of 2020, Little confessed to two Florida murders, for one of which another man had been wrongfully convicted.
Oh, well, that was nice of him.
Yeah. 9 months after the pandemic lockdown, Little died in LA County Prison on December 30th, 2020, and it was not due to COVID at all. It wasn't COVID related. He was 80 years old and had health issues such as lung and heart ailments. Some of the victims still haven't been identified, and law enforcement are still seeking the public's help to identify many of the victims they are unable to close the cases for because they have no positive identification. Little described in detail where he picked up the women and where he dumped their bodies. Some unclaimed bodies and bones are still at the medical examiner's office, but authorities aren't sure if they are linked to Little's confessions.
That's crazy. Like, the first thing that comes to my mind is, how do you keep track of how and who you killed when it's 90 something people?
Yeah, I know.
And you can draw. Did he have a photographic memory?
I don't know. Isn't that crazy?
Like,
impressive and crazy.
Yeah, I mean,
two things can be true.
I've been speechless a lot today.
Yeah,
I've been speechless a lot. Yeah. That's wild because, I mean, again, it was wild to me knowing that, you know, there's very few African American serial killers, mass murderers. He kind of just came out of nowhere too. I remember when they people started talking about him a couple years ago, and like, where the hell did this guy come from?
I removed a portion that said, like, you know, he targeted these type of people, and they even said naive women. I'm like, what the fuck does that mean? Like, you know,
sorry, they trusted him, or
right? Yeah, yeah. So. Yeah, so this is why I wanted to record this last, but probably should have done it first.
It's a bit of a downer.
Yeah, because now that we've done this, it's like, okay, well, bye.
Yeah, and I feel like now we both chose, like, we have our work cut out for us finding some stories to beat these guys. Like, we started out
with a bang.
With, like, the MVPs of serial killing.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
It's not a competition, guys.
Yeah, please don't make it a competition.
Yeah, it's not a competition. Yeah, so.
I'm leaving your house today very uncomfortable. Because now I feel like I can trust even less people. I can't even trust the elderly.
Yeah, isn't that insane? I don't trust people.
No.
I'm not you know, it's funny. I don't even know how I make friends. Because I don't like people. And then it's just like, all of a sudden, we're friends. And I'm just like, how did this happen? How did I let you into my heart?
I know, that's like how we were introduced and we just kind of...
Yeah.
Came together.
Yeah, I don't even know, like, when we actually started talking.
But we both hate people. So
we do.
I think that's why we clicked.
Yeah. We were at some event. Was Nate and Ryan DJing at the same time? Somebody was DJing. We were there both. Yeah, I think so.
I don't even remember when we met for the first time.
I think I'd seen you a couple times before, but I never spoke to you.
Yeah.
And then... Yeah.
I don't remember.
It's
something to do with DJing, though.
It was right after I got married, because, I mean, otherwise you'd have come to the wedding and you would have known all of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. But anyway, I don't even know where we're talking about this. We're just talking about, actually, palate cleanser.
Friendly, how we became friends.
Yeah, we're both antisocial, so that's why. Oh my gosh. Like, and it's just weird that we both, like, I think people say they like it till I start talking to them about it. And then they're like, okay, so maybe I don't like it like you like it. And not like it, interested in it.
Like, we don't want to be serial killers. We just want to know how they became serial killers.
But people are like, you know, I dabble in the idea of watching an episode of something here and there. But you be like, did you hear about the decapitation and the cannibalism?
That's like me and you in horror movies.
Yeah.
Like, have you seen this new movie?
Well, you know, I saw a meme that it was like, you know, it was a split screen of like the same person. And it was just like, you know, me after watching a fake horror movie, and they were like all like scared and terrified and like hiding under their like blanket. Uh-huh. And then the other one, the other split screen is like me after watching a documentary on serial killers, and they're like sleeping all like, you know, happily with a smile on their face and peacefully.
That, I mean, that's what I watch a lot before I go to bed.
Yeah. Yeah. So, guys, that wraps up our first episode of A True Crime.
Yeah, we just threw it to the freaking wolves this week.
Yeah,
like,
that
just
was
went
crazy.
Right into it.
Yeah, we did that. Well, come back in 2 weeks for our next True Crime episode.
Yes.
See you...
Next Tuesday?
In 2 weeks.
See you next Tuesday afternoon.
Next Tuesday. All right, guys. See you in 2 weeks.
Bye.
Bye.